the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Planning. My name is Josh Nunn.
And I am Aaron Wiegman.
And today we're going to be talking about life insurance, one of the more sexier topics of our industry.
Well, I think it's everyone's favorite topic.
Right. And the reason we thought to talk about this today is because September is actually Life Insurance Awareness Month. And Aaron, this is something that you had brought to my attention. I actually didn't even know that there was a month dedicated to life insurance. So maybe tell us a little bit about what Life Insurance Awareness Month is.
Yeah, if you think about life insurance in general, it's probably one of those topics that it's the least favorite discussion that people have when it comes to a financial plan, but it's altogether that much more important for someone's financial plan. And so the life insurance industry has this month of September, like many months have a specific theme to them. But the life insurance industry has taken the September month and is just trying to have an awareness campaign as to why people want to have life insurance in their financial plan, the importance of life insurance. And if you want to go to a certain website, it's called lifehappens.org. There is a lot of information that's not industry specific about it, but it gives consumers a good idea as to why they would want to put it in place and how much they should have it in place. And I think just in general, there's a lot of misconceptions about life insurance and why it plays the role that it should be playing in someone's financial plan. So let me actually just go through 10 facts about life insurance. You might get a little bit of an idea as to why this campaign is important to the industry. So number one, half of Americans say that they don't have any life insurance in place, which is a pretty astounding number, right?
Yeah.
And, due to the fact that the second fact that we wind up having here is that more than 4 in 10 families would face some sort of financial hardship within 6 months if that primary wage earner were to die, and a quarter would struggle financially within a month. I mean, you see how like underprepared people are if, some sort of wage earner were to die in a family.
Yeah, really speaks to the fact that it sounds like the majority of Americans are actually underinsured when it comes to insurance.
That is probably the case. And so, the third reason, the third fact here is 7 out of 10 uninsured consumers say they don't have life insurance because they think it's too expensive. 75% of them overestimate the cost of insurance. And when you wind up diving into those numbers, I think you have some of those too, that, it's a significant overestimation on how much life insurance costs for somebody.
And we'll get into breaking down some of these misconceptions so that people maybe have a more favorable view of life insurance and how it can be incredibly useful to somebody's financial plan.
The fourth fact here is 7 out of 10 women believe having life insurance coverage is important, yet the majority of women are uninsured. I think, with that one, I mean, whether or not the wage earner or the non-wage earner in a family, both people are very important to the financial success of someone's plan. And so regardless of whatever, monetary value that, people wind up having on that traditionally, there's an importance for both people to be properly covered.
Especially when you have, a lot of Americans now, who their households are dual income, right? There's more than one spouse that's working. And so there is a dependency on the other spouse's job.
Exactly. Number five, 4 out of 10 parents with financially dependent children don't have life insurance. So that kind of plays into the whole idea of, more than half of Americans don't have life insurance. So that obviously is something that is a big fact there. Number six, a majority of uninsured Americans say they haven't purchased coverage because they don't know what to buy or how much they need. And I think that kind of plays into how many people are really working with a financial professional that can guide them properly in that respect.
Right. I read somewhere recently that only 40% of Americans actually work with a financial advisor or a financial professional. I wouldn't even specify that as a financial advisor, but somebody who is financially able to provide some type of advice
or guidance. Yeah.
right? Whether that's an insurance agent, it's a property and casualty agent, or maybe it is, in fact, a financial planner or an investment manager.
Sure.
But sometimes those people aren't going to be able to give life insurance advice either because they don't know enough about the industry or they're not licensed.
Right. So I think a lot of people wind up depending on them getting advice from the other professional that they might be working with. And bottom line is nobody asked these people if they should or how much life insurance they should have.
Right.
Number seven, 4 in 10 insurance owners say they wish they would have purchased coverage at a younger age.
Very interesting because, I mean, it makes sense. Insurance rates are going to be more favorable for the younger and healthier individuals.
And you're never as young and healthy as you are right now.
Right.
So that certainly plays a role.
You can get healthier, but you can't get younger.
You can't get younger. That is definitely true. Number eight, 7 in 10 Americans who own life insurance feel financially secure, compared with just 47% of uninsured Americans. I think when you think of that, there is that bottom line protection aspect that you wind up having there. So it's the just in case the catastrophic thing happens, I know that my family is going to be okay. As opposed to you have this outstanding liability that just kind of lingers out there that could destroy a family financially. Number nine, 1 in 5 millennials mistakenly believe they wouldn't qualify for life insurance, even though most of them would.
This I find surprising because it's so far from the truth. It's interesting how millennials don't think that they could qualify or that they would be able to even afford, a policy in this case.
Yeah, and we'll dive into that a little bit too, because I think it's much easier to qualify for life insurance than a lot of people think it is. And then 41% of Americans, 106 million adults, say they need more life insurance. So, I mean, if you look back on this stuff, most people don't have life insurance, and the people who do have it say they probably need more. So what we're looking at here is the majority of the United States population probably needs to have more life insurance. They just need to know who to go to guide them in that making that decision so that it makes sense and it's not this weird thing that nobody winds up talking about.
I think we should debunk some of these myths. I think there are probably belief systems wrapped around the life insurance industry that are preventing people from acquiring life insurance, whether they have it or they don't have it, or maybe they don't have enough. So maybe we talk about some of those things. What are some of the top reasons why people don't buy life insurance?
I think the number one reason why people wind up saying this, and you can see this from some of these LIMRA statistics. So LIMRA is the Life Insurance and Marketing Research Association that comes up with a lot of these statistics for the industry. Number one, why people don't wind up getting it? Because nobody asked them. So a lot of times, I mean, it is one of those things that needs to be brought up, whether it be from a financial advisor, whether it be someone they work with at a bank, if it's their property and casualty agent, a lot of those different places where they could wind up purchasing it from somebody or even purchasing it online, right? So that's
Right.
become more and more popular these days. But I think in general, people still want to talk to someone when making that financial decision.
What's the old proverb? You have not because you ask not.
There
I
you
think
go.
asking is really half the battle.
Yeah, exactly. And just making sure, I guess, you work with people who do have your best interests in mind, who are going to bring up some of those tough conversations, right? We alluded it to this in the top 10 questions or facts about life insurance, but a lot of people don't think that they need it until they're older. And like we said, life insurance is never as cheap as it is today, really, when you're as young and healthy as you really are going to be. If you do wind up getting it older while you are older, I mean, there's been many a time in a financial plan or just working with clients before where people think that, wow, I'm even getting to retirement age. I really wish I would have locked this stuff in because I would have had more financial strategies at my disposal had I done something like this in prior years. So it makes a whole lot of sense. And I guess regardless of where you are in your financial life, just understand where life insurance plays a role in your finances and your financial plan.
And we'll get into that in a little bit because I think it's important to know, regardless of what stage of life you're in, there are, triggering events, there are certain things you might want to be aware of based on where you are in life, you know, that might require a conversation about life insurance, reviewing either what you already have, your current coverage, or maybe looking at getting more. That's going to depend on, you know, if you're single or if you're married or if you're looking to add to your family. There's a number of important life events that can take place that might require that conversation to be had with that person that you trust to have a life insurance conversation with.
Yeah. And just kind of the fear of it's going to be really expensive is another hindrance for people because they don't necessarily understand it, so they don't know how much it's going to cost. And a lot of times when you wind up thinking about purchasing life insurance, you see these big numbers as far as like what the amount of the death benefit might be, and they think inherently that it's going to be that much more expensive. So I have a number here that Americans, more than half of Americans, overestimate the cost of insurance by as much as three times what it really costs them or what it should cost them. So bottom line is, it's not as expensive as you think it really could be. We were throwing around some numbers the other day, and so say it's like a 30-year-old who needs $250,000 of insurance. That might cost, depending on their what type of insurance they wind up getting, they might be spending $15, $20 a month to get something like that, just to get the coverage in place, right? We're not talking about anything extravagant, but it could be very inexpensive to get put your family in a much more financially secure situation. A lot of people also think that because I have group insurance, that's all the insurance that I need. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think this is a big problem because the reality is, if you look at like the median cost of what a group life insurance policy is probably going to cover, you know, the median I think is around what $25,000 and or up to, you know, 1 year's worth of a salary. If you're looking to insure a lifetime of missed income or lost income, and the median amount of insurance that people have is 1 year's worth of salary, that's a pretty significant discrepancy. So the fact that people are relying on their group coverage is astounding. You know, it really does highlight the fact that people do need to be reviewing this and having this conversation about how much do I need, and we'll get into that in a second, because the reality is, you know, one fourth of Americans think that their workplace insurance is adequate, and it's really not.
And if you're depending on that, you're probably going to be running out of money pretty quickly if something happens to that wage earner. Along with all that is kind of that underlying fear of people that it's going to be a really difficult thing for them to get, right? And so they don't necessarily understand the whole underwriting process. They don't understand the application process. So half of insured Americans, they put it off because they don't know how much they need and what kind to buy, and that whole underwriting, the process isn't necessarily laid out for them in a, I guess, an understandable way for them to take action.
I think this is the importance of asking, because it's almost a self-debilitating act of thinking, you know, if you think something's too hard, so therefore you're not even going to do it. Just the belief that it's too hard is going to prevent you from taking action. So this is things the importance of what we were talking about just a few moments ago, asking the question, because the reality is, I think what keeps people from believing that it's easy to do is they don't know how much they need, they don't know what type. And I thought those are things we can go into in just a second too, but I think that does really highlight the importance of just asking the question to that person that you trust. I mean, this kind of sparks another question too, but you know, I think for most people, we've talked about the majority of people being underinsured, relatively speaking. But is it worth it? You know, I think that's probably another question that people ask is, do I really need life insurance? You know, what is the value that life insurance can bring? I think, you know, people probably also don't ask questions about life insurance because they don't think they need it. So, you know, why is life insurance worth it?
If you look at what you're trying to cover with life insurance, some of that hesitation, some people might think that, I don't necessarily want to buy life insurance. I'm going to just go ahead and invest my money, right? And so let's just say you're able to save a couple hundred dollars a month. Is that couple hundred dollars a month that you wind up putting into that savings account or that investment, if something happens to you tomorrow, is that going to really take care of your family? right? I think that's what it kind of boils down to. So when you realize that most people know that they should have life insurance, right? It's just kind of going back to that, how much should I get? So if you think about it, your biggest asset is your ability to earn income. For most people, that's going to be the case. And so if you're making X amount of dollars per year, and then it's going to be 20, 25 years until retirement time, you're a money printing machine. And to your family, that's a pretty big asset. So if you had a money printing machine that was printing $50,000 per year, and maybe that was keeping up with inflation, how much would you insure that money printing machine for?
You'd want to insure it for all it's worth.
Right. So if that you are the money printing machine, you probably want to make sure that you insure that to make sure that your family is going to, if something happens to you prematurely, the family is going to still have that money printing happen.
I think this is what I really love reframing this as is, income protection plan. I think people sometimes get turned off by the word insurance, life insurance. They think of, agents trying to push products on them, whatever it might be, based on bad experiences. But really, what we're talking about is protecting income and future income. So it could be current income if, somebody is in the early part of their career, but it also is going to protect, it's going to help protect future income when you start to factor in, the potential to save a lot of money for retirement and, also covering expenses, covering future needs and obligations in the future. So, I mean, the need for life insurance is clear. I just don't think many people are aware of that.
And I guess we're discussing a little bit more on the personal side too, but what we haven't talked about is even on the business side, right? So even on the business side, you wind up thinking about needs for business owners or key people within a business that could have a monetary value around it. So if the primary owner of a business is gone because they die prematurely, is that business going to be in a cash crunch, right?
Or a key person, or maybe you have two business owners, and one of them passes away, and with current estate laws the way that they are, that ownership may pass on, that half of the ownership of the business may pass on to the spouse. And so you want to be able to have maybe a pool of liquidity to be able to buy out that share of the business so that you're protecting ultimately the business and you're also protecting the family.
Now, a lot of business owners might have a buy sell agreement in place, but they don't necessarily have that buy sell agreement funded and funded properly with the right amount of life insurance so they can come up with those funds. So it's both on the personal side and the business side that, there's many applications for this. But yeah,
Who
the
needs
way
life insurance? What would
it,
you, who would you say like needs life insurance? It's kind of a general question.
It is a general question. So when you think about who needs life insurance per se, it can be anyone from the young individual family. I guess your needs kind of change throughout your lifetime, right? So you as a young single individual, your primary needs for life insurance aren't like abundantly like just slapping you in the face right now, but to our point before, you're never as young and healthy as you are today. So if you wanted to lock in on some insurability, sure, it might make sense for you to go ahead and get that. But your responsibilities kind of change. Maybe once someone winds up getting married, then you have those more responsibilities. And maybe at that point in time, that's when you wind up, taking the plunge. But a lot of times people wind up looking at it and saying, we're two single individuals. We were fine before. We don't necessarily need to do that now. But then all of a sudden, a child comes into play. And then the responsibilities really kick in, So it's some of those big life events where, like, those triggering times when people wind up getting life insurance. It's, when they get married, when they have kids, maybe they wind up buying a new house, and all of a sudden there's this incredible new liability. I mean, what's the average mortgage these days? Whether it be a half million, if it's a million, if it's a quarter million, whatever it winds up being, that's usually, one of the biggest things that people try to cover right there.
And to your point, I mean, starting a business, that's another triggering event why you might want to look at a life insurance policy.
Or you change jobs, right? I mean, if you're depending on those group life insurance coverages, and then also you change jobs and you no longer have that coverage in place, might be a good idea to go ahead and review that kind of stuff.
Especially in today's environment, climbing the corporate ladder, I might be looking for a higher paying job that's now increasing your savings potential. So you probably want to account for the additional money that you're now making. I mean, there's also a case to be made for clients who are retiring. There's a need for insurance potentially as clients are retiring, because then you start to get into Social Security benefits potentially being lost if someone dies prematurely. So at every stage of life, there seems to always be a need for life insurance. But again, I think that all comes back to, again, asking the question, to seeing, fielding some of those questions with an advisor to see, what that need might actually be, and then how to meet that need. What type of insurance should you use?
Yeah, different strategies for different people. Same strategy doesn't go well for everybody, right?
Right.
Square peg, round hole, all that.
Yep. I
So
think that's the biggest question I get though too, is what type of life insurance do I need? But I mean, before we get into that, I think the question I get asked the most is how much? And that's I would say that's the most important question that we get to answer for clients, is helping them determine what that amount is. So, what are your thoughts on coming up with that number? Some it's that magic number that is going to help a client with that peace of mind, knowing that if something does happen to them, their family and what's most important to them is going to be taken care of.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the first thing on people's mind is taking care of all my debts, right? I don't want those debts to live on after I am.
Right.
And so we talked about it before. The biggest debt winds up being someone's mortgage, but maybe there's vehicles, there's credit cards, there's college loans. Some of those are now forgiven, but college loans, cars, debts. That's the first thing that people want to take care of, right? But even if all your debts are taken care of, there's probably still going to need to be some sort of income that's replaced to the family. And so it's kind of coming up with that number. And how long do you want that income to last? Right. So if you have a family of four and the two kids are 5 and 7 years old, and you want to make sure that the debts are taken care of. But even at that, it's not as though you're giving the family the opportunity to pay off the debts, but maybe they aren't necessarily writing a check and paying off the mortgage. You're giving them the money and the choices so they're not like backed into a corner financially. That's the biggest thing. You're giving people financial options. So with that said, I mean, maybe you pay off the debt, maybe there's $500,000 of debt. And then we have another $50,000 of income that we know that we want to make sure that that lasts until the kids are out of the house. So maybe that's another 15 years. Right. So, we're looking at another $750,000 of income. Let's just say we're terrible at investing that money and we just take it out from underneath our mattress.
Right.
Right. And I guess that's what we're trying to look to do here. Let's just give people options. If they're better with it, great. At the end of the day, no one's going to be giving change back to the life insurance company if they get too much.
It may not make a difference, from a rating standpoint or from a cost
No.
standpoint. If you're getting 50, or if you're getting $500,000 death benefit versus a $750,000 death benefit, that minimal difference in premium is probably going to be very
It's less
minuscule.
than you think it is,
Right.
you
Yeah.
know. And I guess the last part would be, so you take care of the debts, then we take care of some of that income, and then maybe there's some like specific things that a family wants to allocate funds for, college per se.
That's a big one. Yeah.
Maybe it's like down payment on your kid's first home or something like that. So then you can allocate those dollars too, right? So if we have $500,000, we pay off the mortgage and some debts. We have another $750,000 for that same client to go ahead and like replace income to the family. And then maybe there's another $250,000 to pay for school, right? So that's $1.5 million. That tends to probably be a bigger number than most people are expecting to see. But what they're probably not expecting to see too is that it's not really that expensive if they just cover it with the appropriate policy. And I guess on the flip side, people wind up saying, well, that seems like a huge number. How are insurance companies able to do that kind of a thing? Well, you wind up thinking about it, the insurance company is really just kind of trying to replace some sort of an economic value. And so they're coming up with numbers that wind up making sense in their mind. And so from the insurance company's standpoint, it's really just a multiple of what your income is going to be based on your age today and when retirement is going to be. So if you are in your 40s, per se, you could get 20, 25 times your income. So if that's that same 40-year-old who's making $100,000, right? While your need might have been $1.5 million, the insurance company is going to say, we might give you $2.5 million just based on the multiple of your income. So somewhere between that need number and what that economic value might be, those are kind of those goalposts where you can kind of say, as long as I'm shooting in between there, I'm probably putting my family in a better place than they are today.
Right. I like that you threw in the goalpost idea. That creates a good analogy, a good framework, illustration, whatever you want to call it, for clients who, you know, there's no one specific right answer. There's a range, and that range is going to, you know, be dependent on, I guess, how conservative you want to be. Yeah. You know, if you want to be more conservative, you're going to want to shoot for that higher number. That's going to maybe include that income multiplier. It's going to get you that higher amount. If you think that, you know, you might be able to get away with just covering the debts and, you know, leaving your spouse to, you know, find a new job and move on or possibly remarry, then, you know, maybe that lower amount that's just covering the debt obligations and the needs, you know, might be enough. It's also, you know, going to be a little bit more affordable as well.
Yeah, and I guess you kind of have to think through it too. I mean, going along with that, you're only as young and healthy as you are today. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think that you're going to be making a significant amount of, you know, more money in the future, or you're, you know, you're in those prime earning years of your career, you might be making $100,000 today, but in a couple of years, maybe you're in a job where you're making $150,000, $200,000. So you kind of have to review that every so often. So maybe you wind up overshooting what you're really comfortable today, so you don't have to go back through underwriting in a few years.
Right.
You know, but I think the insurance companies give you some leeway as far as, you know, the amounts that you can put in place, so that you're comfortable and you don't have to, you know, do that every couple of years and purchase more at a new higher increased age and lesser health rating.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. So I think that's a you know, that definitely tackles half of the question I think most people, you know, are looming with when it comes to that question of how much insurance do I need? And, you know, then there's the asking part of bringing that to an advisor. But I think the second half of that question is what type, you know, I think that's the bigger question in everyone else's minds as well. What type of insurance do I need? Because there's many types and I'm a little overwhelmed as to how many different options there are.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people sometimes wind up leading with that, what type of insurance I should get. And then they wind up getting too far down the road with the cost and so on. So when it comes to the what type, you have two basic types, right? There's the term insurance, and then there's, you know, many forms of different permanent insurance coverage. And the main difference there is going to be what? It's going to be renting it as a term policy or owning it as a permanent policy. And so the renting version is going to be lesser out of pocket, because what you're trying to say is, what is the average cost of insurance for someone my age? And what I'm going to average that out over the next 10 years, or I'm going to average that out over the 20 years or the 30 years. And so the reason why that does tend to be cheap and your group insurance tends to be cheap is because it is only a short time period. If I'm a 40-year-old and I know that the insurance company is only going to be on the hook for the next 10 years, they know that based on their numbers, that's a very low probability for them to go ahead and pay out of that in the next 10 years, unless something happens by accident. So that's why, like, the term coverage can be very inexpensive for someone to go ahead and put in place, because, you know, over 90% of them don't ever wind up paying out. You know, people wind up dropping the coverage, or it just winds up lapsing at some point in time in the future after the coverage ends. The permanent policy is going to be a little different, because if you do wind up keeping it, at some point in time, it is going to pay out. And so they average those costs throughout someone's lifetime. And actually, you know, these days, a lifetime winds up meaning they stretch that insurance cost out through their 120th year. In the past, they had that, that would end at age 65, then it maybe went to 85 and then 100. And as people start living longer and longer, they've actually stretched that out to 120 just to make that a little bit more affordable. But that winds up being permanent coverage.
That death benefit is almost guaranteed because unless you live past age 120, that policy is certainly going to pay out.
Yeah. And, each policy is going to come with its different version of guarantees. And the more guarantees that you wind up putting into a policy, the more expensive inherently it's going to get.
Exactly,
Right?
right.
So that's something just, as you're working with an insurance agent, or just, working with us on, putting together some sort of an insurance strategy, those are the some of the options that we wind up going over on that kind of thing. So how much
And
did
this is why I stress, with certain clients that it's important we get the amount of coverage first, because what we're trying to protect with life insurance, period, is the unexpected event that you pass away. We need to replace that lost income. So whether it happens within 10 years, 30 years, or in your lifetime, we can use a mixture of term and permanent insurance to be able to get you to that goal of protecting potential lost income.
Yeah. First and foremost, have the right coverage. If something happens to you at your funeral, people aren't going to be asking, well, was it a term policy or was it an indexed universal life policy or was it a whole life policy that they had in place? Right? Nobody cares. All they want to know is the family going to be okay? Is the business going
Did
to be
you
okay?
have life insurance?
Were they financially responsible to put this stuff in place so that we don't have to worry about them and do a GoFundMe? So when it comes to the type of insurance, there's lots of different strategies that you can put in place, but it kind of depends on like how long you need that coverage, how long you need it in place. And then there's, as you wind up getting into some of the permanent policies, there's other things that you would wind up thinking about, like, do I have estate planning needs? That might be covered by a permanent policy. Do I want to build up cash value in that policy? So there's a lot of other strategies that kind of like go on down the road that wind up being a little bit more intricate or a little bit more complicated, but primary thing is get the right amount. I don't care what policy it is.
And there's different applications even for having, term. So if, again, kind of coming back to some of the reasons why you might want to, insure, whether it's, debt obligations, if you were to pass away, I mean, that could be an appropriate application for a term policy, right? Because, a mortgage is only going to be 15 to 30 years.
Right.
So that could be a great application to have a term policy. You don't need to own insurance if you own a mortgage and you're just trying to cover that debt obligation.
Yeah, the basics, the kids might be in the house for X amount of years. I want to make sure that we have that obligation taken care of. Then
Right.
maybe your basic needs for that kind of stuff go down as your financial obligations start going away. So those are some reasons why you might say, well, I only need a 15-year term to cover when the kids are in the house. I need a 30-year term to cover, the mortgage. And then maybe I have a permanent policy to go ahead and carry on through my retirement life, because I realize that if I die, there's going to be lost earnings with pensions or Social Security or on and on and on.
So, coming back to one of the other misconceptions you brought up earlier in the 10 facts, I think is, that most people, don't think that they can either get good rates, that it might be too expensive, but also that it's really hard to get. So, Aaron, I think one of the concerns that people have is, again, that difficulty of acquiring life insurance, but I think we should debunk that and just let people know exactly how easy it is to actually apply and to qualify for life insurance.
Yeah, and even if there is some sort of a health issue, this is what these insurance companies do on a regular basis, right? So, they've kind of simplified a lot of that, whereas, years gone by, with any sort of application that you would have some sort of an examiner come to your house and take a blood draw and do all the health questionnaires and do the build and weigh you and do like it was kind of an invasive process, right? And so these days insurance companies are trying to do that more efficiently for them, so they're not spending as much money doing this part of things, but with a lot of the underwriting questions that you can ask right up front, a lot of these don't even require having some sort of exam. So you wind up taking the application. And if, you know, based on your answers in that application, you know, you meet the qualifications of doing some sort of simplified underwriting, a lot of times they just wind up looking back into your MIB and just seeing what kind of like medications or a little bit on the health history is there. And if they wind up, you know, checking the boxes and they say, we can kind of, you know, carry through this. I've had applications actually go through for folks in less than 24 hours where they're already covered. And so as far as, you know, extremely fast. And if there are some like health questions or, you know, questions that you need to, you know, have a little bit more, you know, background on, they wind up asking for information from your doctor and they get the doctor's records and they put it out there and they see what the situation winds up being. But I think for most things, like a lot of people wind up saying, well, I don't think I can get it because maybe I have high blood pressure or I have high cholesterol or I have maybe even like a cancer or like some sort of like a family history or something like that. Well, they underwrite that stuff all the time, right? And if you wind up taking medications and you're taking care of yourself, I mean, there's even, you know, just like, you know, personal story, even in my family, there was like a cancer history. And so, you know, even after, you know, prostate cancer, someone had actually gotten coverage 5 years after they wound up having prostate cancer. So that kind of stuff can actually happen. It's just from an underwriting standpoint. So just because you have some health history, there is specialized risk and detail on things where, you know, people wind up getting coverage and still being able to take care of their family. And you know, it's not going to be as expensive as they think it's going to be.
There's no hurt if you don't ask.
Yeah.
And there's no harm in doing that. I think some people, you know, may view that underwriting process as, you know, like an inquiry on your credit score, like it's just going to ding you over time. But no, you're not going to know anything until you ask, until you go through the underwriting process and you get the rate that, you know, that the life insurance company ends up coming back with. You're not going to know any of that until you go through that process.
Right. So, I mean, if you're going to go out and buy a house, right, are you going to just go out and buy any house that you want? Or are you going to kind of figure out what your credit rating looks like? See what kind of mortgages are available to you and, you know, purchase the house accordingly, right?
Right.
Because the cost of that mortgage is going to be different for you than it is to that, you know, neighbor down the street that does have the bad credit.
Right.
So you're going to be only able to afford, you know, different types of houses and different sizes of houses based on the type of mortgage and all those kinds of things. Same thing kind of applies with life insurance. If you think in any way, shape, or form, it's probably going to be a good idea, go through the underwriting process, see how much it's going to cost.
Probably be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See how much it costs. And then based on how much it costs and what your budget winds up being, put the best thing in place for your family.
I tend to see this a lot with clients, but insurance seems to be one of the last things that families or couples review, when in reality, it probably should be flipped around. I think protection should be one of the first things in your financial plan that you actually review. Because, you know, like we've been talking about this entire conversation, you're no good to your spouse or to your family if you're dead, right?
Yeah.
All of that potential savings over time, that income that could be replaced, is not going to do anything if you don't have the proper protection in place, whether that's disability, which, you know, we can get into in another podcast conversation, or it's life insurance, like what we're talking about today. But I mean, how often, Aaron, should people be reviewing their life insurance plan? I think this is a common misconception as well, is that, you know, it's like a set it and forget it. Well, you know, I got term insurance last year and I worked with my, life insurance broker and I think I'm set. You know, I think I'm good.
Yeah.
I haven't reviewed it in a while, but I think that there's a danger to that because, again, people's situation is constantly changing. Again, you know, if there's a job change, there are other life events that take place, people do need to review this quite often. How often do you think is necessary?
You know, I guess you review it even just once a year. If there's some big changes in your life, just make sure that it makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Go back to it. Just make sure it's the right amount. Make sure it's the right kind. It's all the same kind of questions that we were just, you know, going over. You know, and just recently I was going over something with a client, and the last time they purchased life insurance was when they were 28. Well, they're in their mid 50s right now. how much different is their financial life today than when it was when they were 28?
Right.
And so the reasons why they put it in place back then are much different than it is right now, as they're trying to like prepare for retirement and try to, you know, make up that gap to that retirement date. So there's different reasons why you wind up having it at one stage of your life versus the other. And you just need to make sure that the coverage winds up making sense in all aspects of that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people in that category, you know, again, like to your point, they may have existing life insurance, but if you bring those details, you know, to an agent like one of ourselves, you know, who are knowledgeable in the area, they're, might even be options with that existing coverage, you know, to either, you know, continue that, to roll that over into a newer policy, to renew that policy, to, you know, do certain
supplement
things.
It, you know, existing, whatever you need to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the point is, you know, again, communicating with your agent or your trusted financial person, you know, to have those conversations.
Yeah. And based on the numbers that we had talked about at the beginning of this, there's a lot of people that should probably be having that conversation.
I think that's the takeaway from today. You know, some of those statistics being that this month is, you know, Life Insurance Awareness Month, I can see why they've dedicated a month to it, is because the reality is not a lot of people are properly insured. And so, you know, if we can help start this conversation, you know, our goal is to help clients make sure that they're properly protected for their families, for themselves, ultimately, so that they can end up reaching, you know, their goals and also meeting their obligations and needs for their family. But Aaron, you know, if any clients have questions about insurance, I'll provide my information, but how could they reach you if they wanted to contact you directly?
Sure. You can always reach out to us at the office. So the number at the office is 858-487-3939. And you can reach out to me directly at my email. It's aaron.wiegman, aaron.wiegman, at financialsense.com. So reach out if you have any questions. You know, if you don't wind up reaching out to us to have that conversation, reach out to someone that you know and trust, because it's an important conversation to have.
And my email is josh.nunn@financialsense.com. I have to reiterate the same thing. I mean, yeah, if it's not us, make sure that you're having that conversation with somebody else who is licensed and who has your best interest in mind. Anything else, Aaron? Any last thoughts about, you know, the life insurance conversation as we wrap things up?
You know, I mean, it is a full month, but if it's something that you've had questions about before, don't hesitate to have that conversation with someone. It's an important thing. It's an important piece of someone's financial plan, and I think it's an often neglected piece of someone's financial plan, as you can see some of those numbers that we already laid out. So I would urge everyone to go ahead and make sure that, like, you, your family, your business, you'll have the proper coverage in place, and you're satisfied, you're comfortable, and you can sleep easy at night just knowing that if something catastrophic happens, things are going to be all right.
Well, with that in mind, we're out of time, but until we return, we hope you guys have a great week.
Thanks much.
See you guys.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.